but it's the cure.
Well, Sheridan Harbridge is an actor, playwright, director, comedian, and graduate from NIDA of 2006. She wrote Songs for the Fallen, which was won the best musical and outstanding actress at the New York Music Theatre Festival in 2015. She was in Susie Miller's Prima Facie last year, which was on at the Griffin Theatre. She was in Muriel's Wedding, the musical, and acclaimed productions such as The Sugar House, The Dog, The Cat at Belvoir, Kill Climate Deniers at Griffin, so many productions. She's worked with John Cleese in the Just for Last Festival, and she's been on all kinds of TV shows like Rake and All Saints and Wild Boars. Welcome to Stages, Sheridan.
God, it sounds like I've had a great time.
You have. Have you? Have you?
A great time. I'm a very lucky girl.
Aww. So how's it going now with everything for you in shutdown? Is it? Are you working on something? Have you?
I am actually. I am there was performance stuff that was meant to be happening that obviously isn't, but it's actually been a good time to write again, which I haven't for a long time had the focus and sort of I severely lack the discipline. I'm a professional procrastinator. So this has been a really I'm actually having great. It's like an enforced writer's residency. And so I'm having a good time, even though I know it's bleak, but it's been positive to feel creative in that way.
So where are you from? Where do you hail from? Where were you born?
I'm from a little town called Terrelgan in Gippsland, which is about 2 hours out of Melbourne. Not so far from where the big fires were. Sort of towards Mallacoota. So country town, coal mining industry, big paper mill, yeah, like a industry town. Grew up on a very useless farm. I don't know what we farmed. There were animals there, but none of them produced anything that was sellable. So country girl.
Ah, so were your parents creative? Like where did you get this, performer? Where did she come from?
I have no idea. Though my dad, very curiously to us all, he was a fitter and turner, then earth mover, truck driver, sort of did a bit of everything. When he retired, he out of nowhere joined, I think, up to 7 choirs at one stage.
Wow.
Spent his retirement sort of traveling around performing with choirs, and this was just so it confused all of us. No one saw it coming. No, he used to sing us to sleep, but that was it. And even when the lockdown happened, my dad was calling me about his gigs that had been cancelled.
Oh my god,
I loved it. Yeah,
right, that is so great.
Definitely, I guess there was that strain from there. Also, on my mum's side, my grandma was a beautiful singer, but I think it really came from, I'm one of 7 kids and I had a great mum who really was so whatever you want to do, just go do it, and would sort of kick us out of the house to find our destiny. And she really just we could have been anything we wanted to be, and I really think that came from my mum. So there was a little inkling in me, and my mum really set me on the path of going, oh yeah, if anything is achievable. So I think it's her positivity that kind of made it all happen,
and the freedom of being able to explore.
Yeah, it never occurred to me that there would be a cap on what could happen in my life. She was pretty, and I of course didn't realize that as it was happening. It was in retrospect thinking of what an incredible, generous, like this woman manning 7 children, all had that capacity to be thinking about being planting the seeds for our ambition and our future. And all of her kids are ferociously ambitious to a fault, probably.
Oh. Well, that's creative in itself, having 7 children.
Yeah, I know. Coming up with names, yeah, very creative.
So just an aside, are they still living in that area?
A couple are.
So were they affected by the fires?
No, they weren't. Oh, the fires before then. So many that we almost forget. and the outer sort of country there of Gippsland got a bad hit probably about 7 years ago now, where they were evacuated. But this time they were the safe zone.
Great, great. So when do you think that you, you know, when were you first introduced to the arts then? Did you see things?
I reckon it came from, it does make me laugh. We were brought up in the Pentecostal church, Assemblies of God, bashing our tambourines. And that is like a song fest, you know, every morning at primary school you do praise and worship. You get given a liturgical ribbon to dance around with. And I think singing was a very early regular part of my childhood. So I guess it would come from there. I think, though, I felt like a writer. And even if I didn't know I'd end up in performing arts, I knew I was going to write. I really got lost in books. And I think really it began from there. And it was during high school with some really excellent teachers that I learned that writing for theatre was a thing. In terms of theatre, though, I have this memory that chills me to my core. We were taken up on an excursion to see a production of Romeo and Juliet somewhere in Melbourne, and we were disgusting, feral high school kids. I know I like made an aeroplane out of my program
on
the balcony, and it's now I go that it must have been Bell Shakespeare, and I bet those performers are my friends now, and I feel sick thinking those people having to perform to this bunch of ferals from the country.
Wow. So,
you know, who knew that one day I'd be treading the boards.
So Romeo and Juliet, the first theatre you remember.
It had to have been a Bell Shakespeare show. Yeah. Oh, it gives me chills.
So obviously it wasn't like, this is what I want to do at that time.
Yeah, it really crept up on me. Yeah. I had this really great, the benefit of Traralgon Secondary College, which was, I'm happy to say, a totally feral high school when I was there, and a shock to the system after my very Pentecostal primary school. But it got all the new teaching grads had to come to the country before they got a placement in the city. So all the teachers, especially the drama teachers that came, were just full of pep and optimism before, you know, years before the kids had worn them down. So we got these really energetic, great young teachers, and I had a myriad of really great drama teachers who, one of them saw I could write when I was in year nine and said, do you want to write the school play? And he lived three houses down, and I would go to his house after school every night, and we wrote a school play together when I was in year nine, and he's still a good friend. He came, saw Prima Facie, which was so great.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. What was the play that you wrote?
It was called The Irritation of Abraham Eggly. I've got to work on my titles.
Excellent.
So it was definitely a combination of really positive teachers who believed that it could be a career path, and a couple of my contemporaries in high school did go on to be professional performers, and I think it was a great, great bevy of teachers that did that. They're important, high school teachers, very important.
Mm. So what was the – were you involved in that? Were you also starring in your first
– I wrote myself the lead role. Why else would I do it?
Yeah.
And it's a trend I have not backed down from.
And was it a musical as well?
Yes, it was. I think there were covers, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
It was, and it was I think it was about this poor guy who spent his life being bullied, and I was definitely one of the bulliers.
Well, yeah, exactly. We all want to play bad guys for sure.
Yeah.
So you had a few mentors, it sounds like, teachers or people that saw something in you. What about in your career, like outside of school? Were you also, you know, helped along the way by people, by others?
I went there was definitely the local theatre companies, but I really do – I think the high school teachers were the main points of focus. But I do remember reading an article in the newspaper about Richard Roxburgh, who at the time was a man I'd never even heard of, and I just happened to read this article, and they were talking about the National Institute of Dramatic Arts, and I just remember it very vividly, going, oh, right, you could go and study this. This could be a thing. And I remember that as a kind of turning point of going, right, this is a profession that can be studied and I should do that. So that was a very a bit of a light bulb moment, the old Roxburgh. And then not long, I think, probably in the same year when I was sort of forming these ideas, I saw the film Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and that blew my mind as to what art, what film culture, what acting could be. That was, a light bulb moment again of going, wow, this is, I felt alive watching that and wanted so desperately to be a person who could make that type of art as well.
It could be a little bit more than the Romeo and Juliet. So you went to NIDA. How was that? Did you have to audition numerous times like others?
Yes, I think it's the four rounds. We did the four rounds, and I'd never really done a proper monologue or anything like that before, and I picked the most inappropriate.
Oh, what did you do?
Oh, God, I even think back on it. I picked this piece, I think it was called The Love of the Nightingale by Timberlake Werdenbaker, and it was based on a Greek myth, I forget which one, but it's where a woman, her sister's husband rapes her, and she confronts him, and he cuts out her tongue. That is the piece at 18 that I went, I'm going to be an actor.
Wow.
So comically out of my depth. And I did sort of another piece that was fine that got me through the first round, and then that was my next piece. And the inimitable Kevin Jackson just saw blood. And it was like I was chased around the room with a chainsaw. But even though it was a horrific sort of moment, I in retrospect realized he was working me and saw that I had the capacity to understand the depths I needed to reach, even though in that room on that day I did not know how to do it. He saw an artist who knew that you're supposed to try. And somehow, even though it felt like such a disaster of an audition, I got in, based on the fact that I didn't crumble, perhaps. And then on the first day of NIDA, he walked up to me and said, so I don't think you're very good, but we'll see what happens. A great start. But NIDA was really hard. I was very young and I'd never lived in a city, so all those things were very overwhelming, and it felt very, I think, isolating. And, of course, everyone's poor, you're working. If you're not, you know, killing yourself at drama school, you're working as well. But it was, I felt, it was a really great time to be 24/7 working on your craft. And I had great teachers and really I felt very supported there. My friends from here are my closest friends and I still work with them. And yeah.
So coming out of that, you wrote your own work. What happens when you self-devise work or write from, you know, where do you draw your ideas from?
I actually got the idea for Songs for the Fallen when I was at NIDA. It was in a class with Kevin Jackson. He was talking about The Lady of the Camellias. And he told this story, which is what Songs for the Fallen, that character, that story was about her. And he told this story about this woman who was a courtesan who apparently had worn a white camellia for 24 days of the month and then a red camellia for the days when she was not available for business. That image astounded me, and I thought, God, there's a show in that. And I think it was probably not 8 years later until I actually sat down and wrote that show, but it harked back from that moment. I'm very attracted to these theatrical images. I think I start with the image of a scene before the dialogue And yeah, it came from that. And really the reason I sat down and wrote the show, I always felt like I was a maker, I was a writer, but I did spend the first sort of 5 or 6 years out just being employed as an actor, which was very good for my ego, but it didn't feel like what I was put on this planet to do. And I was in An Officer and a Gentleman, the ill-fated musical, and we'd been booked. It was a 12-month contract, and that show, we got notice after 3 weeks. And 6 weeks. So I had this year up my sleeve where I'd not booked anything else. And I had to sit down, chained myself to a desk and wrote that show. And it really felt like I was inside myself as an artist for the first time. But geez, it's difficult. Oh, like it's the most terrifying experience, but really worthwhile.
So exposed out there with your words as well as you performing.
Severe fear of failure is really crippling. And you just got to push through and get to that other side and then it's all worthwhile. But yeah, that the fear of failure, I'm an egotistical beast just like everyone else, and the idea of failing was faced me time.
So what is a favorite role that you've played over your career?
Marie Duplessis in Songs for the Fallen, definitely.
Yeah, and because it's so you, like all of you as well, and that
it was the, you know, everything I had to offer on a on a platter, and also just she had a really fun, heartbreaking journey that I think had been overlooked, historically overlooked, and been crammed into a romance. This is, you know, Moulin Rouge is based on this woman's story as well. But when you really looked into her true story, it was the most ferociously clever woman who had everything stacked against her. And that really just fired me up to go, no, that's the story that's got to be told, not this sort of, you know, winsome woman with TB. It was a woman who rose above sex assault, poverty, all these things, to be so charismatic and kind of captivating. That role followed so closely by Tessa in Prima Facie at Griffin last year. That was an extraordinary.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because that's, I mean, it's similar sort of vein of theme, but also kind of opposite in a way in the performance. So was it challenging and difficult to play that role?
Really exposing. You know, and there was no, you know, Songs of the Fallen, I was covered in glitter, in a corset with my boobs pushed up to my chin, all sorts of fun things. And this was none of that. It was the words, the story, the human, and that was all. And really difficult topic to sit in. But it was so well written by Susan that all the work was done for me, and I just had to be a good actor and not get in the way of a great script. Yeah, and the Lee Lewis, as the director, had such a, she knew exactly how that show had to go the minute I walked in the room, and I was really in good hands.
So you've also worked on Muriel's Wedding. How is that? Like, that is like the other side of it. Tell me about that experience.
That was such a good time. I had the pleasure of being a small kind of core cast that helped develop it over a couple of years before we even did the show. So I'd been working on that show, and my hubby as well, Michael Wally. I'd played, by the time we actually performed the show, I'd played every role in the show in developments and got to really contribute to the birth of it. So it felt, it was such a special show. And making a show like that is as hard as making a small devised at the Old Fitz. It's just more money but bigger problems. And we all worked so hard. But under, you know, Captain Simon Phillips, who's just a really extraordinary beast of a human. He really made that a cool experience. And then, you know, getting to play ABBA was absolutely such a cool moment. It really tickled me, being in those boots. Oh, beautiful shoes, yes.
What fun. It was so fantastic. I mean, yeah, they've all been fun, and I've seen them all. They're really wonderful, and you are just an absolutely, you know, divine performer to watch. Is there a role that you have always wanted to play?
Oh, I never have a good answer for that question, only because...
Juliet.
Well, I've managed to sort of get through this life without really doing a Shakespeare, which... I now start to sniff around the incredible humor in Twelfth Night and things like that and go, ooh, I would like to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time that I did myself a Shakespeare or something. You know, I can't get this far in without having done it. But I've had this weird career where I've only done I think two musicals. I have only done new work. So there's new, every role I play is a new thing that I've never known or imagined. Mm-hmm. And that is such a fun, you get to make it, you get to make the role, the fantasy to play. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's been a really great, I mean, just once though, I would love to be able to learn my lines before the first day of rehearsals. I would love that pleasure.
And not for them not to change.
Yeah, there's no point in my work doing that. So I've only ever played new roles. So I've very long ago stopped thinking about fantasy roles to play.
So what would you be doing now if things hadn't shut down because of COVID? You'd be in Sydney, wouldn't you? You're in Melbourne at the moment.
Yes. My husband had just joined the Harry Potter cast playing Ron, and he did 2 weeks and it all shut down. So we're sort of here waiting for that to start up again. But yesterday was going to be the first day of rehearsals for Dubbo Championship Wrestling at the Hayes Theatre, which is a new beautiful musical that I was directing. I've been director and dramaturg on that for a long time, and yesterday was meant to be the first day. It was a bit of a sad day yesterday, but that show will happen.
It will.
Next year, it's such a cracker of a show about an amateur wrestling troupe in Dubbo. And it wasn't till I really started working on it that I went, how has wrestling and music theatre not met each other
before? Are you kidding? Because I was going to say, how are they meeting in this?
I know, because the passion is so big. Why are they not always launching into song? I can't wait for people to see that show. It's a cracker. So I look forward to that.
So if you were going to give, an up-and-coming actor or director or singer or performer, like, advice, what would you say to them?
I reckon it's a really difficult industry, that it's a difficult art to practice, because so often we have to wait for an opportunity to practice our craft. And that can be a real throttle on people becoming well-oiled machines. And I really think for young people, I can only say is you need to stay present in the industry. It's not going to come to you. You have to be in it and see as much theatre as you can, see as much film as you can, to just stay with your foot in the door of this industry, and definitely, you know, look for collaborations, think of what you can make to stay present. Because I think waiting for a job can be the end of many a good artist. And if it's too long between auditions, and it can be a real, you can really become a locked down creature. Mm. So I think staying present and just keep seeing the artist that you love, and learn from them, you know, go watch everything that Helen Thompson and Heather Mitchell are in, you know, just watch. And that is a way to keep your craft alive and know when you do finally get up there, the things that you want to achieve. I just think, I think a lot of people when I first graduated didn't even go see the theatre that they were trying to get into. And I thought that was an odd way to practice your craft.
Mm. Well, I suppose sometimes money and things, especially if you're studying, it makes it hard. But there's so much online now, like you say. You can watch a lot online. Well, Sheridan Harbridge, it has been a pleasure to speak with you today. Thank you so much for joining me.
I've had an excellent time. Thank you.
And I really look forward to the Dubbo Championship Wrestling musical. Thanks again, Sheridan. And that was the wonderful Sheridan Harbridge joining me there. I'm Regina Botros, and you've been listening to Stages. I'm going to play you a little bit of Waterloo to keep your spirits up. I'll keep the theatres alight as much as I can by talking to practitioners here on Stages. And next week, hopefully, fingers crossed, if all goes well, we will be talking to Lee Lewis, who directed Prima Facie. Now, Prima Facie was on at Griffin last year, about the holes in the justice system for women in sexual assault and harassment. And, you know, these are important times to remember that there are people out there in a very darker place than maybe some of us. So let's send out, you know, thoughts out to them. And here's a little bit of ABBA. Stay safe, and I'll see you next week.